The lifetime ban of Pete Rose is now ended. Is he going in the Hall of Fame next year? Let's talk about it. Yes, welcome into another episode of First Pitch, your daily source of baseball talk here on the Inside Baseball Network. I'm your host, Troy Brock. You can follow me on Twitter at Troy B Baseball. He's Drew Crabtree. You can find him on the Twitter machine at Drew Crabtree 12. We're going to get to Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson and the lifetime Hall of Fame ban being lifted. We're going to also get to Roky Sasaki now being on the injured list for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Not like we didn't warn you. But first, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, turn on the notification icon so you can be notified when another episode just like this goes live. If you're listening on audio, leave us a five-star rating, share the show with your friends, send them to firstpitchpodcast.com so they can get their daily source of baseball talk. How are you doing this morning up there in tropical Toledo, Ohio, Daru?
It's tropical. It's Toledo. It's a great day. We had a lot of rain yesterday, so it's kind of gross and humid and cloudy today. But we're here. It's Toledo. You know, I don't know if it can get any better than this. Like, there are people that live in Miami, and they choose to do that. I choose to live in Toledo, and that's just so much better.
I can only imagine. But yes, it is a great day today, as there was baseball yesterday, and there's even more baseball today, and it is always a great day when there is baseball. And we did have a little bit of a lighter schedule yesterday because of some postponements from that rain up there in the north and northeast section of the country, but we did still have 4, 8, 12, 13 games played. And the first game was the Brewers at the Guardians. Guardians won 2-0. LT Allen got the win. Quinn Priester got the loss. And Emmanuel Clase A picked up his 9th save of the year. Next game was the Red Sox at the Tigers. In 11 innings, the Tigers won 10-9 on a walk-off 3-run home run from Javier Baez. Tigers are now 28-15. Red Sox fall to 22-22. And then also in 10 innings, the White Sox at the Reds. Again, 10 innings, White Sox won 5-1. Wilson got the win, Pagan got the loss. White Sox move to 13-29, Reds fall to 20-23. Have at it, Drew.
I don't like this game anymore. Andrew Abbott pitched great. He had that one run. The Reds still can't do anything on the base paths. Ellie De La Cruz hit a game-tying home run in the bottom of the ninth. Then Emilio Pagan gave up all four of those runs with two outs, mind you. He got the first two guys out. So at this point now, the White Sox, that was their fourth win on the road this year. The Reds have now made it to another extra inning game without scoring. They've played six extra innings. I believe one of them went to 11, so five games. They are 0-17 with 7 strikeouts and 1 caught stealing in that point. They haven't obviously won a game in extra innings. They've dropped now 8 of their last 10. It's not great. It is what it is. A lot of people are getting frustrated with Terry Francona, but to me, it's still all about ownership and front office and trying to tell him to make creme brulee out of shoes. Like, they're not trying to win baseball games, and it's super disappointing because this is a young and talented team. You know, they got 2 more games to go.
2 more games to go with the White Sox, indeed. And yeah, I don't think Terry Francona is the issue. He's only been managing there for 43 games. So I don't think he's the one that needs to go. Rays at the Blue Jays. Rays won 11-9 to move to 19-22. Blue Jays fall to 20-21. Uchida got the win. Hoffman took the loss. And Montgomery picked up his first save of the year. Pirates at the Mets. Mets won 2-1. Pirates fall to 14-29. Mets move to 28-15. Kranick with the win. 3-1, 3.65 ERA now. And Mitch Keller took the loss, 1-5 with a 4.15 ERA. And Edwin Diaz got his ninth save of the year. Braves hosted the Nationals and won again. They are now at 500. 5-2 win last night. They are now 21-21. Nationals fall to 17-26. Spencer Schwellenbach got the win. He's 2-3 with a 3.31 ERA. Lord got the loss, 1-5 with a 5.17 ERA, and Johnson picked up his first save of the year. Update on the Braves and old friend of the pod, Lindsey Crosby. He should be joining us for tomorrow's episode. So that is why we are shoving both the Hall of Fame and Roky Sasaki into today, because Lindsey Crosby is going to talk Braves with us on tomorrow's episode tentatively. Marlins at the Cubs. Cubs win 5-4. Cubs are now 25-18. Marlins fall to 15-26. Flexen got the win and Tinoco got the loss. Rockies at the Rangers. Rangers won 4-1. Jack Leiter got the win, 3-2 with a 4.34 ERA. Kyle Freeland got the loss, 0-6 with a 6.15 ERA. And Armstrong picked up his first save of the year. Rockies are now 7-35. Rangers back above 500 at 22-21. Astros hosted the Royals and won 2-1. They are now 21-20. Royals fall to 25-19. Brian Abreu got the win, 1-1 with a 1.5 ERA. And Schreiber got the loss, 1-2 with a 2.12 ERA. That one also ended in a walk-off. Angels at the Padres. Padres won 6-4. Another game that ended in a walk-off. A lot of walk-offs yesterday. Padres are now 26-15. Angels fall to 17-24. Adam got the win, 4-0 with a 1.61 ERA. And Kenley Jansen got the loss, 0-2 with a 6.55 ERA. Mariners hosted the Yankees. Mariners snapped their losing streak. This one also went to extras. The Mariners won 2-1. They are now 23-18. Yankees fall to 24-18. Legamina picked up the win. I think that was a former Reds legend. I'm pretty sure you told me how to pronounce that name the other day, and I forgot. 3-1, 2.08 ERA for him. Tim Hill, 3-1, 3.86 ERA. The loss goes to that man. Arizona Diamondbacks at the San Francisco Giants. Giants won 10-6. They are now 25-18. Diamondbacks fall to 22-21. Robbie Ray got the win, 6-0 with a 3.04 ERA. Brandon Pfaadt picked up the L, 6-3 with a 3.73 ERA. Last game of the day because of the two postponements, Athletics at the Dodgers, and the Athletics won 11-1. They are now 22-20. Dodgers fall to 27-15. Athletics picked up 18 hits in that ball game, but Jeffrey Springs got the win, 5-3 with a 4.27 ERA, and Landon Knack took the loss, 2-1 with a 5.89 ERA. Of course, the Twins and Orioles and Cardinals and Phillies games from yesterday were both postponed. It's going to be a long look ahead to today's games later on in the show because they're both playing doubleheaders, so we've got even more baseball than normal on today. Final thoughts on yesterday's ball games, Drew?
We were talking about the Braves finally getting back to 500, and right now it's the battle of don't sleep on them teams, and right now it looks like the Braves are starting to actually catch a little bit of fire, and the Nationals are, you know, not looking nearly as great. 17-26 at this point for Washington with only 5 hits last night. They got to get something going if they want to take advantage of that that young core as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, I think they have to stop running Dylan Cruz out there every day because he is just unplayable at the major league level right now. It's sad watching him, how bad he's been this year and last year. He's been worse this year with being the number 2 pick in the 2023 draft, I think it was. But beside the point, that's a different story for a different day. Today is all about Reds legend Pete Rose and member of the Chicago Black Sox, Shoeless Joe Jackson. You don't have to wear shoes if you got black socks, I guess. But it came out yesterday that Rob Manfred decided that the lifetime ban of players now ends upon death. So any player who was banned for life is now not banned if they are deceased. And that goes for Pete Rose. This all stemmed essentially because of, you know, the petition to get Pete Rose into the Hall of Fame for what he did on the field And now he has a chance to go into the Hall of Fame after he has passed away. And it could be as early as next year. So the question now becomes, Drew, will he be a unanimous Hall of Famer when he hits the ballot for the Veterans Committee next year?
I don't know. I don't think that it'll be unanimous, just because that baseball writers and people that vote on these things tend to overthink them. I thought that I read somewhere that he's not he's not essentially Hall of Fame bound until like 2028, but I could be wrong. But I think that he'll make it in when he's on the ballot. I don't know if he'll be unanimous, just for the simple fact that it's so hard to be unanimous, especially with baseball. Like, you can be a transcendent player and not be unanimous. Looking at you, Ken Griffey Jr., et cetera, et cetera. And it's just that part of the equation is just so weird. Like we said yesterday, in terms of his ability to play baseball, Pete Rose is one of the best to do it, and easily one of the best in Reds history. Like, the man led the majors in hits 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. He led them in doubles. He led them in batting average and on base percentage. He obviously has the title as hit king. It's just between the lines, Pete Rose was easily, like, he should be when he retired and so on, without the gambling and the extracurricular relationships, we'll say, he should have been a unanimous pick. But separating the art from the artist is going to be hard. I think that they will do it. I think that they will get him in. I am curious how they're going to get him in, because I'm also curious how they're going to deal with, or how they continue to deal with, like, the steroid era of baseball. And if there's going to be a little asterisk next to their name that said, you know, he accepted a lifetime ban, and so on, which I find might, complicate things as well, because if you are banned, because Major League Baseball banned you, versus you are banned because you accepted the ban to stop further discovery, those are two really two different kinds of things. So I think he'll be in. I do, especially as a player, because he was fantastic. But yeah, we'll see what happens there in terms of how they plan on going about it. Because I'm, you know, same with the steroid era. I'm interested to see how they're going to continue to handle this, because the writers don't like putting in people with checkered histories.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you brought up the steroid era, because that was my next topic on this discussion here. Is good old Boob Nightingale tweeted yesterday that, and I quote, this is the tweet verbatim: if Pete Rose gets into the Hall of Fame after breaking baseball's cardinal sin, it should certainly open the door for Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and even those like A-Rod and Rafael Palmeiro, who were suspended for PED use. And, you know, I want to get your thoughts on that. Pete Rose's ban, while he did accept it so there wasn't discovery, the ban as a whole stemmed from his gambling on baseball. And whereas he did not, allegedly, he did not bet on his team to lose, he bet on his team to win, according to what he has said, or what he did say. He can't say anymore. But now, the players who were banned for steroids actively did things to alter their performance on the field. So, in your mind, where, and I'll give my thoughts on this in a minute, but where do you think that this changes anything as far as that goes, as far as the ban for players like Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Alex Rodriguez, for their steroid use and or alleged steroid use?
I think immediately, no. Just because that the people voting now are the people who have been voting the last few years. And, you know, we've got writers who just send in blank ballots. So they're, I think that they're going to continue to stick to that. Whether or not that's right, that's obviously up in the air. I have softened on the idea. Oh, since high school, I was very much incredibly against it. Now I'm like, you can't honestly tell the story of Major League Baseball without, one, the steroid era, but also, two, you can't tell the story of Major League Baseball without Barry Bonds or Alex Rodriguez and so on and so forth. So personally, I would probably still, I am never going to have a vote, but if I had a vote, I would probably try and put them in with the caveat that they probably should have a steroid era wing of players who have been suspended and so on due to steroid use and whatnot, because while yes, taking steroids helps them hit the ball a little bit farther, it's still really freaking hard to hit baseballs. And the thing is with me is with Bonds, at the very least, he was amazing before his steroids kicked in, or whenever that happened, because obviously you look at him as a rookie and you look at him when he retired and it looks like retired Barry Bonds ate rookie Barry Bonds. He was massive. But it's such a difficult conversation because there are, and I haven't looked this up myself, but there are probably players in the Hall of Fame who have cheated at some point or done things that are currently outlawed, like a spitball or what have you. So if we are to take Pete Rose's word that he only bet for his team, which honestly, personally, I do believe that part because that's just who he was. He was incredibly competitive and he let you know about it. So I do think that he only bet on his team to win. Now, I do wish that we did have some discovery to try and put that to bed, but there would be some discovery of some, let's say, relationships that he probably shouldn't have come to light. So with the steroid era, yeah, I think that they'll end up getting in. Whether or not they're getting in before they pass away is a completely different story, because I do kind of think that the voters and the writers are so stubborn that they will stick to their guns until they end up passing away, whenever that is.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said, especially, you know, the Barry Bonds aspect of it, because, yeah, before he allegedly started taking steroids when he went to San Francisco, while he was still a member of the Pittsburgh Pirates, he was still on a Hall of Fame trajectory with or without steroids. And so, you know, there's a lot that goes into it from every different angle. But I think that this lifting of the lifetime ban for Pete Rose, Shoeless Joe Jackson, and all the other players who received a lifetime ban and have since deceased or passed on, I don't think that that specifically changes anything as far as the steroid era players, just because it's just a lot of it is just so just completely different circumstances. And, you know, to Boob's defense, he's not the only one that's writing about it. As we were talking about this, I got a Twitter notification. Ken Rosenthal wrote about it. It raises questions for what's next. And so, you know, it's I guess it's a light news cycle right now for on the national level. I don't know. They don't want to talk too bad about Major League Baseball's favorite team losing another pitcher, but I don't see the correlation between Pete Rose betting on his team to win and a bunch of guys taking steroids to physically alter themselves and have better results on the field. I don't really see the correlation there. They both did things that they shouldn't have done, but they also still have no correlation with each other. I'm failing to see the correlation there. I think that at some point, the steroid era players, some of them will get in, not all of them. I don't think that Athletics man who got hit in the head with a baseball and hates Alex Rodriguez. Yep. I don't think that he will ever get into the Hall of Fame. And there's probably a – does he?
He does.
Nice. And there's a lot of other high-profile names from that era who I still don't think will get into the Hall of Fame, but I think that guys like Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Alex Rodriguez – Mark McGwire, I think that those guys will be in the Hall of Fame at some point, even if it is, to your point, in a special steroid era wing of Cooperstown. And it's just, but as far as these big J national guys trying to find some kind of correlation between Pete Rose and Barry Bonds, I just don't see it.
No, they dropped this yesterday, so it's obviously still all very fresh, but I do appreciate them trying to connect the dots, but they're two very, very different situations, and the Black Sox scandal as well. It's just it's all very, very different, because it all has to do with gambling versus taking steroids to cheat and so on and so forth. So I think that we're both in lockstep that we don't think that this is honestly going to change anything, at least in the short term.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you know, we didn't even really touch on the gambling aspect of it. And a lot of people are pointing to and have pointed to over the last few years, the fact that gambling on sports is becoming more and more of a in-your-face, legalized across the country type of thing. And so they're kind of, and Major League Baseball is getting a lot of profit from sponsorship deals and promotionals and things like that from these sports books. And the reason why I haven't really brought it up until now is just because I'm not anti-sports gambling. Like, yeah, I don't think they should have a gambling commercial every other commercial. I hate commercials in general. I don't think they should have any commercials every other commercial, but because commercials are stupid. But at the same time, I agree that players themselves on the field should not be betting on the game that they're a part of, I don't see a problem in sports gambling as a whole. Am I wrong on that?
In the industry itself, no. However, when it comes, it's just, you tell someone the stove's hot, but they still want to touch it to figure out if it's actually hot. You tell athletes not to bet on these games that they have a material influence on, and it's going to be hard for them not to. I mean, every year we're going to see a good handful of players get suspended for betting on their sport. Now, I will say, preventing NFL players from betting on horse racing or college football or NBA is incredibly dumb. I think that if you're going to police people on how they bet, it has to be, you're not allowed to bet on things that you have an influence on. or have insider knowledge. So Major League Baseball players can't bet on Major League Baseball. You can bet on anything else. Don't bet on Major League Baseball, and so on throughout all the leagues. If you are an umpire and you are caught betting, and I swear some of them out there are, that should honestly be an immediate firing. Just like if you're, you know, in journalism and you're caught using AI, you should be fired right away. And it's just this whole thing is awful because sports betting in general is something that's been around for a long, long time. It's betting in general. And it is a predatory market, and especially these brands are incredibly predatory. And they go towards the people who have addictive personalities and so on, and will 100% fall into the trap of betting more than they can afford to lose, or and so on and so forth. Like, I had a short stint where I did a little bit, and I learned very quickly not to bet on baseball, for one. I can bet on college football, and I was pretty good at that because 90% of the games are chalk. But I also know who I am, and I know that if I get too wrapped up into it and I'll think, okay, I need to, you know, if I can get this, then it'll make back what I lost and so on. It's just the whole industry is predatory, but the getting rid of it, legislating it out of existence, probably not going to change anything, unfortunately, for one way or another. And it's just, we have to accept that it is part of the society, but also make it so that it keeps the integrity of these sports, because the last thing we need is a pitcher shaven, you know, or and players shaving points, or pitchers intentionally walking guys, or so on and so forth. I think that the penalties for betting on your own team should be a bit, or betting on your own sport should be a bit stronger than if they still have penalties for betting on other sports. But it's just I've stopped doing it. I've stopped betting just because I can't control myself, honestly. And I know that there are a lot of people without the perspective to realize that, and it's a terribly unfortunate part of what we have, but there are people out there that can make a living off of it, and you know, that's the thing, survivor's bias. You see one person do it and you think you can, but you ignore the 99% of the people who have failed. And that's, yep, you see that with everything.
Yep, you're spot on with that. And the last thing I have to say about this subject as a whole: if you are going to gamble, if you are going to bet on sports, don't do parlays. There's a reason that the odds on parlays are so high and that they pay out so big if they hit, and that's because they don't hit often. So don't do parlays. That's all I got to say about that. But you know, we'll move from talking about sports gambling to a team who rosters somebody who allegedly gambled on sports, or at least his interpreter did, quote unquote. Who knows? Major League Baseball's favorite team, the Los Angeles Dodgers, are now going to be without yet another of their best starting rotation in the Major League Baseball, as Roki Sasaki is heading to the injured list with a right shoulder impingement. So for those of you keeping track at home, Blake Snell, who also had to be shut down after starting throwing last week, earlier this week, he had to be shut down because he still wasn't feeling good. So he's probably done for the year. Tyler Glasnow, haven't seen a report on him, so I don't know. Clayton Kershaw is coming back, but he's 80. Shohei Ohtani has not pitched this year and won't until maybe next month. Who knows? And he's not as good when he's doing both. So you can see his offense take a hit whenever he does start pitching again. And now Roki Sasaki, who, you know, rookie, who's just given the rookie of the year before he even signed with the team, he is now heading through the injured list. So that's five of their best starting rotation in Major League Baseball. The only one left is Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who we have seen have major success this year, pitching once a week on Friday. And we saw last week that whenever his schedule changed, he doesn't do so well. So how screwed are the Dodgers right now, Drew, that they have Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Tony Gonsolin, and the boys to bring back an old saying that hasn't been used in quite some time? How screwed are the Dodgers?
I think they're pretty screwed at this point, Troy. The fact that they're still first in the NL West is honestly a testament to their lineup and everything. But, you know, Yamamoto has been fantastic this year, and, you know, he did have that one blow up. But I don't know, man. That's a lot of injuries that they have to overcome, whether it's short-term or long-term, because the season don't stop if you have a bunch of guys on IL. Every team in Major League Baseball can attest to that. It's like, wow, half of your lineup is on the IL right now. It'd be nice if you could take a break. Nope. We got 162 games to get in 175 days or whatever, stupid. And the Dodgers, you know, looking forward, I'm interested to see if they just continue to roll out what they've got or if they're going to try and make a deal or two to fix this. But like their lineup, everybody who is more or less their everyday player, all of them have positive B-WAR except for Michael Conforto. He's at minus 0.3. You know, Andy Páez is at 2-1, Shohei 2-1. And so their lineup has been able to pick them up. And that while that is awesome and it's incredible for the Dodgers to the fact that they're still 27-15. I don't think that's super sustainable. Lineups go cold at some point. And even if you have great players all up and down, they're going to go in slumps. And having rough starting pitching starts the domino effect of you're going to wear out your bullpen faster. You're going to require more out of your lineup every single day. So I don't think they are nuclear implosion screwed, but I think that they are. I think that the Giants and the Padres are looking up at them saying, all right, we need to go get this. We need to go for it and actually win this division, because the Dodgers have it's going to be rough coming back from this. And then obviously their one IL stint of Yamamoto for this entire rotation to be blown up at this point. Did you know Luis Garcia is 38 years old? Goodness gracious, Grandpa.
Wow, he's almost old enough to be our dad. But yeah, no, it's yeah, it's not great. And you know, with their loss yesterday, while they do still have a 27-15 record, which is a good record at this point in the season, there's no taking that away from them. Their loss yesterday, along with the Detroit Tigers and the New York Mets winning, move them out of the major league lead for best record in baseball. And they are now in third behind the Mets and the Tigers, who are both tied for first at 28-15. And their lineup has been the biggest part of their success this year, but they lost. And we didn't even talk about this last week, because honestly, I didn't even know about it till yesterday, but they lost a big member of their lineup in Teoscar Hernandez last week. He went on the injured list with a groin strain, and he has been one of their best hitters, along with, you know, right up there with Freddie Freeman this year, who Freddie Freeman has been their best hitter this year. And so it's their starting rotation to this point in the season, as good as it's the best in the Major League Baseball. Oh my God, look at all the starting pitchers they got. Major League Baseball's favorite freaking team. Their starting rotation this year has a 4.12 ERA, which ranks 21st in Major League Baseball, for those of you keeping track at home. And they have allowed more runs. While they have scored more runs, they have also allowed more runs than both the San Diego Padres and the San Francisco Giants. Yes, the Dodgers have scored 229 runs, but they've allowed 181. The Padres have allowed 145 runs, and the San Francisco Giants have allowed 164 runs. The Dodgers' Pythagorean record is 25-17, two games worse than their current record, whereas the San Diego Padres and the San Francisco Giants' Pythagorean records both have them with better marks than the Los Angeles Dodgers' Pythagorean record at 26-15 and 26-17, respectively. And it's just, this is where I have a big issue with the way that the majority of the population looks at Major League Baseball. And I understand looking at things on paper and looking at stats and looking at things on paper and saying, hey, this is good. On paper, this is good. But what other people fail to take into the equation is injuries. And I don't know if that's just because I'm one of the most pessimistic people to ever follow the sport of baseball in the history of baseball, or if that's just the fact that people have no common sense and don't like to, I don't know what it is, but you have to take injuries into account, people. And the Los Angeles Dodgers pitching rotation on paper, if they ever pitched an entire season, it's good. They don't pitch entire seasons. Blake Snell's done it twice in his career. Tyler Glasnow has never done it in over 10 years. Yoshinobu Yamamoto he's only in his second year in Major League Baseball. In his first, didn't pitch a whole season. Roki Sasaki, he's in his first year in Major League Baseball. Everybody's crowning him legitimately crowning him the Rookie of the Year before he even signed with a team. Don't even know what he's going to be in Major League Baseball. He's not great. Good, not great. Can be better, still not great. And he's hurt. Which, if you look at his time in the NPB, he didn't pitch whole seasons in the NPB. It doesn't make any sense to me how you're going to, people look at these things and they're just like, they're never going to get hurt. They're the best. Byron Buxton's the best center fielder in baseball. He plays 80 games a year. Best center fielder in baseball. Yeah, Shohei Ohtani, he's better than Babe Ruth. He barely pitches. And whenever he does both, he's not as good as when he just hits. He's better than Babe Ruth. Best player of all time, Shohei Ohtani. I just don't understand. And a lot of it comes down to the marketing that Major League Baseball does, which they freaking suck at. But it is very... it was yesterday or the day before, pissed me off because it's stupid. Shohei Ohtani shared a picture of his dog for his dog's birthday. Guess what MLB posted? Oh, look, it's Shohei Ohtani's dog. He gave him a Most Valuable Dog Award because it's his second birthday. Nobody freaking cares about that stupid dog. Like, it doesn't make sense. You've got players that are Jacob Wilson. The rookie shortstop for the Oakland Athletics has struck out 9 times. He's hitting over 360. He has 9 doubles, 5 home runs, struck out 9 times in 40 games. And I've never seen Major League Baseball put out anything about it. God forbid they miss a freaking post about Shohei Ohtani's stupid ass dog, though. It doesn't make any sense to me. And I will never understand it. Am I off base here, Drew? Like, am I missing something? Am I the one that doesn't have common sense? What is happening right now?
The injury discussion is still well-founded because, expecting teams to be great because their entire lineup and their entire rotation is going to be healthy, but that never happens. And on paper, baseball ain't played on paper. So, the Reds can attest to this. We hype ourselves up all the time, and obviously we come crashing back down to earth. You're completely right in the sense that they've got, marketing issues. I did look up the Jacob Wilson thing. They've tweeted about him 3 times over the last 12 hours, but it was all the home run, two of his 5 home runs were yesterday, and then his first multi home run game. But that was the first time since April 1st. So you're well on track with that one. Baseball has a marketing issue, and you know the fact that we went Mike Trout's entire career essentially without them hyping him up is a testament to that. There are more than just a few coastal teams out there, Major League Baseball, and it would do well. Did you know, for example, and I think that they should probably highlight this a little bit better. Javier Baez is back at being good at playing baseball.
Yep.
Like the Tigers obviously are on fire, but this month, particularly, Baez is slashing .368, .400, .737 with a 1.17 OPS. Obviously, Tigers are 8-1 this month with 4 home runs from Javier Baez.
Yeah.
This is a whole marketing thing, and I don't understand why they don't push Detroit more, but that's just me. But I'm also only an hour away from Detroit, so I hear it a little bit more up here, especially with the Mud Hens. But I understand you want to continue to prop up the franchises that make you the most money. I get it. You and I have made our decisions of prioritizing jobs and so on because they pay us more money. I completely understand that. But you do still have 30 Major League Baseball teams. And while, you know, teams like the Rockies don't have much to post positively about, there's probably something. So it does the game a disservice. Because you'll see some of these guys come out of nowhere and get no recognition, and then all of a sudden they get traded to one of these large markets, and then they just take over, and everyone's just like, "Whoa, where did they come from?" I was like, the dude's been tearing it up in Minnesota this whole time, or something like that. So no, I'm definitely with you on there.
It's just I just don't get it, man. I don't understand why everybody was so hyped about this rotation, and here we are not even 2 full months into the season, and guess who was freaking right again? To quote one of my favorite talking heads in sports, Colin Cowherd, who is very polarizing. I know that not many people I don't know a lot of people that like him. I freaking love Colin Cowherd, but to quote him, it doesn't matter how many times I'm right. People are still going to argue with me. And I don't understand it. I don't know. Dodgers are screwed. Their pitching sucks because they can't pitch a whole freaking season. It's not hard. Look at the Phillies. Their entire rotation does it. Pitches a whole season. Aaron Nola hadn't been hurt since 2016. So I don't know. Don't know. My wife also taped down that little black thing that I always fidget with while we're doing these podcasts. So because it covers up its little thing for our keyboard, and it covers up a light, and the light's too bright for her because she plays World of Warcraft in the dark. So I ain't got something to fidget with. Any final thoughts on the Dodgers pitching staff being decimated with injuries before we look at today's games, Drew?
No, I think we pretty well covered it. I'm interested to see how the Dodgers respond.
Yeah, it's I don't know. They'll probably trade for Herman Marquez of the Rockies, and he'll be a Cy Young contender. Who knows? But yeah, we got a lot of freaking baseball today. 4, 8, 12, 16, 17 games on today's slate.
And I'm out of water. 1:10 p.m. Eastern. Brewers at the Guardians. Guardians look to move to 26-13. Brewers look to move to 21-23. Henderson at Gavin Williams. 3:45 p.m. Eastern. Diamondbacks at the Gigantes. Diamondbacks look to move to 23-21. Giants look to move to 26-18. Rodriguez at Hicks. 4:10 p.m. Eastern. Yankees at the Mariners. Will Warren at the good Luis Castillo. Yankees look to move to 25-18. Mariners look to move to 24-18. Side note, wanted to say this earlier. If it's not Shohei Ohtani or Aaron Judge, MLB.com's Twitter account doesn't give a shit. 6:40 p.m. Eastern, Red Sox at the Tigers. Dobbins at Schoolball. Red Sox look to move to 23-23. I'm annoyed. 23-22. Tigers look to move to 29-15. 7:07 p.m. Eastern, Rays at the Blue Jays. Ryan Pepiot at Chris Bassett. Rays look to move to 20-22. Blue Jays look to move to 21-21. 7:10 p.m. Eastern, Pirates at the Mets. Bailey Falter at Clay Holmes. Pirates look to move to 15-29. Mets look to move to 29-15. 7:14 p.m. Eastern, White Sox at the Reds. Martin at Nick Lodolo. White Sox look to move to 14-29. Reds look to get to 21-23. How are you feeling about this one, Drew?
I think that Nick Lodolo needs to have another good start. I am so high on Nick Lodolo. It's ridiculous. I'm very confident in his ability to throw baseballs, and they're facing a guy with a 4-1 ERA, 4.01 ERA, sorry. And they got to get something going. And it's just they don't have Mr. David Bell, who says, you know, we'll get him next time, da 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 da. They have Terry Francona, and some of these losses are starting to pile up, and they're starting to look a little bit unacceptable for what we were expecting. Now, obviously, the ownership needs to do something. They need to just tell Nick Martinez to go to the other dugout so Luis Robert can come with the Reds, and I'll take that at this point, but they got to get something going. But if they win tomorrow, that means there's a rubber game on Friday or on Thursday, and I am not confident in their ability to win a rubber game. So we'll see.
We will see indeed. 7:15 p.m. Eastern, Nationals at the Braves. Parker at Elder. I didn't even know her. Nationals look to move to 18-26. Braves look to move to 22-21. 7:40 p.m. Eastern, Marlins at the Cubs. Weathers making his season debut and Jameson Taillon. Marlins look to move to 16-26. Cubs look to move to 26-18. 8:05 p.m. Eastern, Rockies at the Rangers. Antonio Senzatella at Patrick Corbin. Rockies look to move to 8-35. Rangers look to move to 23-21. That's another point in the another feather in the cap of the Rangers and their pitching factory. They turned Corbin into a serviceable starting pitcher after he was the worst pitcher in Major League Baseball for 5 years. 8:10 p.m. Eastern, Royals at Astros. Michael Lorenzen at Gordon, making his season and or Major League debut. Royals look to move to 26-19. Astros look to move to 22-20. 9:40 p.m. Eastern, Angels at the Padres. Hendricks at Vasquez. Angels look to move to 18-24. Padres look to move to 27-15. 10:10 p.m. Eastern, Athletics at the Dodgers. Oh, boy. Hoglund at Yoshinobu Yamamoto, moving up a day again. Athletics look to move to 23-20. Dodgers look to move to 28-15. And then, of course, our two doubleheaders. First game of the Twins and Orioles at 12:05 p.m. Eastern. Ober at Kramer. And then second game, whenever that's over, Simeon Woods-Richardson at TBD. Twins look to move to 23-20. Orioles look to move to 17-24. And then Cardinals at the Phillies. First game at 1:05 p.m. Eastern of that one. Second game at 6:15 p.m. Eastern. It is a split doubleheader, whereas the first one is not. Cardinals look to move to 25-19. Phillies look to move to 26-17. First game is Eric Fetty at Jesus Lizard. Second game is Sonny Gray at Aaron Nola. Final thoughts on today's overloaded slate of games, Drew.
Don't overlook the Cardinals playing two games in one day. They're evidently really good at doing that. please sweep the Cardinals. And the Yoshinobu Yamamoto pitching on a Wednesday now is very interesting. That's definitely going to be something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I am very much looking forward to waking up and the very first thing I am doing in the morning. I'm not clearing my emails. I'm not clearing my notifications, which is normally what I do. The very first thing I am doing in the morning is looking at the Athletics and Dodgers box score to see how Yoshinobu Yamamoto did moving up another day in the rotation. Yeah, so good day of baseball. It's always a good day with baseball, and we've got 17 games today. So it's always a good day also here at First Pitch. So if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, turn on the notification icon so you can be notified when another episode just like this one goes live. All-time record length on this episode, by the way. If you're listening on audio, hit to leave us a five-star rating. Share the show with your friends. Send them to firstpitchpodcast.com so they can get their daily dose of baseball talk. And until the next time, this has been First Pitch.